You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Ben Valsler and Helen Scales. Don't forget, you can also listen to us online, anywhere in the world, or even out of this world in Second Life.
Coming up, we find out how a carbon-neutral car could compete with the best big fat muscle cars around, and how you could be putting algae into your petrol tank.
But first, we've a power-related kitchen science for you.
For this week's kitchen science, we're plugging in to the science of batteries. Now, Dave, what do you have for us?
Well, this week I thought we'd do a little experiment with some batteries. All you want to do is get a couple of batteries, ideally one of the old-fashioned zinc carbon batteries and some other types of batteries. You want at least two of each. Put some in the freezer, get them nice and cold, and keep other control batteries outside of the freezer. And then we're going to compare them to see how they work afterwards.
Batteries generally are fairly hygienic, but is there any risk that we might contaminate food with it?
There's a small chance you might cause a battery to leak, so you probably want to put the batteries in like a plastic bag or a little container or something so you don't ruin your lovely steak for tomorrow night.
Battery-flavoured steak. So before we really get into this, how do batteries actually work?
Well, batteries are essentially a pump for pushing electrons around a circuit. They work by releasing chemical energy and using it to push these electrons around the circuit. They work with a type of chemical reaction called a redox reaction. These are things like rusting. It's basically where one kind of molecule or atom loses some electrons, another one gains some electrons, and this releases some energy.
So the chemistry inside basically just involves shuffling electrons around. And this is why when we plug them into our MP3 player or our torch or something, that's why it can push electrons around a circuit, and then they do work for us, lighting the bulb or playing our podcast.
Yes, in a reaction like rusting, both halves of the reaction are happening in the same place. The iron is losing electrons and the oxygen is gaining electrons. They're right next to each other, so we can't do anything useful with that energy. But the people who design batteries are very cunning. What they do is they split this reaction into two halves. So, for example, in a dirt cheap zinc carbon battery, on the negative electrode, you've got zinc losing electrons onto the negative electrode. And on the other side, on the positive side, you've got ammonium ions gaining electrons to form ammonia. Now, these reactions will keep on going for a while, so the negative terminal will get more and more negative, and the positive terminal will get more and more positive, until the energy it requires to push another electron onto the negative electrode or take another one off the positive electrode is so much that it's more than the energy released by the reaction.
And that would mean that if it's not energetically favourable, the reaction will stop.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why when a battery isn't plugged into anything, the reaction doesn't happen. It will just sit there for, in some cases, years and years and years without anything much happening.
Until, that is, you plug them into something.
Yeah, that's right. You've got a load of electrons squashed together at the negative side. They want to expand. So if you give them a route to do that along a wire, they'll expand through that wire and push themselves along the wire back to the positive end, forming electric current. As soon as the electrons get to the positive end, then the reaction can carry on. And you get a current running through the battery until you run out of reactants to drive it.
But there are all sorts of different types of batteries. Do they all use the same chemistry?
They use similar chemistries, but the subtleties are different because some batteries, like a car battery, you want to be able to produce a huge current when you start the car, but you're not really worried about how heavy it is. So you can use really dense metals like lead, which are really heavy. There's not a huge amount of energy in a car battery for its size, but it can produce an immense current when you start the car. Hearing aid batteries you want to last for a very long time but only produce a very small current. So people who design batteries play with different chemistries to produce the kind of battery you want.
Okay, so that's fairly basically what batteries are and how they work. But why have you put them in a freezer?
Well, knowing that a battery is run by chemical reactions and that chemical reactions are affected by temperature. For example, if you have a lump of wood, you can leave it in a room at 20 degrees C for thousands of years and not a lot will happen to it. But if you heat it up 500 degrees centigrade, it ain't going to last very long. It's going to burn. So I thought we'd see how temperature affects various different types of battery.
And you have a multimeter here to test it with. Now, I've used these before. They can measure resistance, voltage, current. What are we actually going to measure?
So at the moment, we've got it set up to measure voltage. So that's how hard the battery is pushing the electrons around the circuit.
Well, let's have a look at one of your batteries. You've got a zinc carbon battery, and it's at room temperature. So let's have a look and see what the voltage is.
It's producing about 1.7 volts at the moment.
It actually says on the side that it's 1.5 volts. So obviously getting a bit of extra free energy from it. But is that the voltage that we'd see if we were actually using it?
It all depends on how much current you take. For example, I can plug a light bulb into this now.
So we still have it attached to the multimeter. This will now tell us the voltage it's drawing whilst at the same time lighting up a light bulb. The bulb is lit and it says 1.53 volts. So clearly we've lost some voltage.
That's right. If you don't draw any current from the battery, it can keep pushing electrons onto the negative terminal, away from the positive terminal, for as long as it likes. It will slowly reach the maximum voltage it can produce.
And the multimeter isn't pulling any current.
Yeah, that's right. But as soon as you start drawing current, then the voltage you can produce is limited by how fast the battery can push electrons around. So the actual voltage it can produce is reduced.
How about the frozen one?
Well, we can give it a try.
So this has come fresh out of a freezer. It's a very cold battery. And so now, with a frozen battery, we're reading a voltage of, oh, well, it's 1.7 volts. So even though it's been frozen, it doesn't seem to be any different.
But we can try it with the light bulb on again.
Oh, we're seeing 0.88 volts, and the light bulb is hardly lit at all. So with no current being pulled, we're still seeing the maximum around 1.7 voltage. But with the current being pulled, the frozen battery can't handle it at all.
Yeah, that's right. We've slowed down the chemical reactions by cooling down the battery, which doesn't affect the maximum voltage it can produce, but it does affect how fast it can produce current. So it reduces the voltage as soon as you start drawing a current with a light bulb.
Okay, well, that's one type of battery. Are other ones designed to overcome this problem? Can other ones work in really cold environments?
If you reduce the temperature, you're going to reduce the maximum amount of current that any battery can produce. However, some batteries can produce more current to start off with than others. For example, a rechargeable battery can produce a lot more current than one of these zinc carbon batteries. So for the same light bulb, it's not going to be affected nearly as much. But if you tried to power a radio-controlled car with it and draw lots of current, it's not going to work as well.
But surely there are some conditions where batteries are really put to the test. For example, Arctic missions or out in space. How do we get around this problem there?
It is a big problem on space missions, because if your batteries get too cold, they're not going to produce enough current, and then your computer stops working, and then you've got a dead spaceship. So they do actually have to heat up their batteries and stop them getting too cold. So they actually have little electric heaters powered by the solar panels to keep the batteries warm and stopping them dying.
Okay, so does this mean that if I bulk buy some batteries and try and get a sort of cash and carry discount on them, I should then keep them in a freezer to make sure that they last longer?
If you have a battery just sitting there not doing anything, the chemical reactions do happen very, very slowly. And basically they will discharge on their own just sitting there, because little currents can flow in places where they shouldn't really. And cooling them down will slow this down, but it's not a very big effect. Some people think it's a good idea, but apparently it's not a very large effect, so it's probably not worth it.
So there you go. You may as well just store your batteries on the shelf. Or, even better, don't buy so many of them in the first place. That's all we have for this week's Kitchen Science. We'll be back with more next week.
So, freezing a battery slows down the chemical reactions inside and reduces the power you can get from it.
I do love doing Kitchen Science. It's always so fascinating.
You have so much fun.
After last week's experiment, where we demonstrated how flowers take up water by using food colouring to make a white flower multicoloured, we heard from Ashley Dunn in Australia. She sent us an email saying, "I listened to your podcast with regards to changing colour of flowers using food colouring. My granddaughter and I picked a white rose and did the split stalk experiment." This is where you split the stalk up the middle, put one half in one colour and the other half in the other colour. And she said that we invited us to send in photos, so she sent us their one and only attempt. So that's Ashley Dunn, and Emma is her granddaughter, and they've sent us a picture. We've put it onto the website. You can find that at thenakedscientist.com/kitchenscience. I must say, it's actually probably a bit better than our photos of it.
It's gorgeous. It really is. You have to check it out. I've got it right here. It's very pretty indeed.
Very pretty, yeah. And very colourful.
And very colourful. And you can clearly see the two sides, the blue and the red, coming in there. It's fantastic. Yeah. And also on our forum, Chemistry Form said he tried it with celery and ended up with half blue, half orange celery. And maybe that's a way of making it colourful to encourage children to eat it. But I'd say definitely just use food colouring, not any kind
not
of ink. That might be not so good. Food colouring in your celery, definitely enough. Way of making it more colourful. But if you would like to let us know about your own science experiments, or if you've got something you think we should put our experimental touch to, then do get in touch. The email address is chris@thenakedscientist.com.
Laying the facts bare.
I say.
The Naked Scientists.